Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "Anti-Chief Activists Want Event Blocked." They've also asked Big Ten Network not to broadcast game because of imagery. By Julie Worth, Champaign. Opponents of Chief Illini WEC are calling on state and federal authorities to stop a planned Paint the Hall Chief event Thursday night in Champaign. A letter signed by 16 people, activists, several Native Americans, and professors affiliated with the Campus Faculty Association, among others, said the event violates state and federal anti-discrimination statutes, including the U.S. Civil Rights Act and the Illinois Human Rights Act. Event organizers have asked Illini fans to wear Chief shirts or other apparel to the game to show support for the former U of I symbol. Anti-Chief protesters, who consider it a racist mascot, also plan to be on hand, though both sides have pledged to remain peaceful. The letter said the behaviors to be engaged in at this event result in racial discrimination directed at Native Americans and their denial of equal opportunity to education and full enjoyment of public facilities that are protected by law. The letter goes on to allege that the discriminatory behaviors could include a performance by Chief Illini WEC, the university band playing music designed to be Indian, to juice up the crowd to yell Chief, and displays of the university's trademarked Illini WEC logo by the official university cheering section, the Orange Crush. The behaviors are illegal and therefore not protected by First Amendment rights, the letter argues. The letter marked Crime Alert was sent to Governor Bruce Rauner and to local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, including the U.S. Department of Justice and FBI, according to Stephen Kaufman, U of I Emeritus Professor, one of those signatories. It asks for immediate action to prevent serious confrontation at the event. U of I spokeswoman Robin Kaler said Tuesday she had not yet seen the letter and declined comment. Patrick Wade, spokesman for the U of I Police Department, also had not seen the letter, but said police are working closely with State Farm Center on a security plan for Thursday night's game, as they do for all games. "We deal with demonstrations like this all the time," he said. "I think this one's a little different in that it'll be occurring during a basketball game." The department has talked with organizers of the anti-chief protest, as it tries to do with any demonstration, mainly to figure out what their goals are, he said. "The police department has a public duty to facilitate everyone's First Amendment rights," he said. "We're working with the State Farm Center to make sure it's a safe environment for everyone who is attending." Wade said he wasn't sure if the Paint the Hall Chief event organizers had contacted police about their plans. The event was promoted on Facebook by the Honor the Chief Society and Students for Chief Illini WEC. But members said that while they support it, they are not sponsoring it. They said it arose out of a community discussion on Facebook. Kaufman also sent a letter to the Big Ten conference officials on Sunday, urging them not to broadcast the game and to withhold any payments to the U of I from the broadcast. The wearing of Native American imagery by members of the Orange Crush and other fans, and the band's music make it impossible for the Big Ten Network to broadcast this basketball game free of abusive and denigrating imagery directed at Native Americans, the letter said. Tom Kasich, three libertarians think they're better choices for governor. Your choices for governor this fall may not be just Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker or Gene Ives and Daniel Bliss. Don't forget the Libertarian Party. Third parties historically have done poorly in Illinois gubernatorial races. The best finished was by Green Party candidate Rich Whitney in 2006, with 10.4% of the vote. The best a Libertarian has done was Chad Grimm's 3.4% in 2014. But don't tell Cash Jackson, Matthew Scarrow, or John Stewart that they're wasting their time running for governor as Libertarians. I think people are going to look not for a billionaire in November, but for somebody from the trenches who has experience, and that's me, said Stewart, a 51-year-old former professional wrestler, the illustrious Johnny Stewart, who lives in Deerfield and runs a used car dealership in Chicago. Illinois is broken, said Scarrow, a 35-year-old Chicagoan who calls himself a serial entrepreneur. It is a state filled with fraud and corruption, and I believe that the Democrats and Republicans cannot get along on anything except raising taxes. Only a Libertarian sitting in that seat in Springfield can straighten this state out and handle House Speaker Michael Madigan. I've slept in the back of a Ford Focus for several days, and I'm 6'1". I've slept in people's homes and in my truck. It is a lot of work, and that's my commitment, said Jackson, a 39-year-old veteran of 20 years in the Navy. My prediction is that Bruce Rauner gets the nod and J.B. Pritzker gets the nod. Then you're going to have competing interests between a billionaire, a multimillionaire, and a middle-class guy who's been a political activist fighting for human and constitutional rights since he left the Navy. What people are looking for today is something entirely different, and we really have an opportunity to capitalize. I'm confident that my hard work is going to pay off in the end. The way the Libertarians choose their nominee could not be more different from the lengthy, expensive, TV ad-centric way the Democrats and the Republicans will. The Libertarian Party will meet at a Bloomington hotel the weekend of March 2 and 3. Only those who have been registered state party members for at least 120 days can vote on the party ticket. Fewer than 100 people may decide the gubernatorial nominee, Stewart said. We have about 2,800 registered Libertarians in Illinois, but only about 90 to 150 will show up and vote. It's going to be a close call, he said. You have your leaders in the party, but after that, who shows up is kind of a guess. It's always a dice roll. That's not the end of the process. Party members then have to collect at least 25,000 signatures on candidate petitions in a 90-day period to get their ticket on the statewide ballot. We've done it before and we'll do it again because the Libertarian Party is growing, Scarrow said. The numbers, although it's a small sample size, bear him out. There were almost twice as many votes for the Libertarian candidate in 2014, 135,316, as in the previous high water mark, 2002. Jackson cited Illinois laws that infringe on constitutionally protected rights, such as firearm owner cards, red light cameras, civil asset forfeiture, and other issues as reasons he wants to be governor. I was fresh out of the military and I took a look at what offices were becoming available, and of course governor stood out for me, he said. I could have run for a different seat, and I said, you know what? I only live once and it's go big or go home as far as I'm concerned. He said his experience as a Navy submariner and in working with people of diverse backgrounds makes him a better candidate. We say, embrace the suck. And I think politics is about the same way, Jackson said. You embrace the suck, put your head down, plow ahead, and get the job done. Stewart and Scarrow have similar platforms. Cut taxes, cut government programs, legalize marijuana, get government out of your bedroom. Beyond that, it's mostly about personality and presentation. I am definitely the front runner. I am the most policy-driven, the most well-spoken, and the most principled of the three candidates, Scarrow said. And if you put me in a debate with Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker, I will dismantle them verbally. They have nothing on me. I am a libertarian who believes in freedom more than those two, and I am a very dangerous man with a microphone. Stewart said he's a former Republican who left the party after the late party chair Judy Bar Topinka said he'd have no support in the race for U.S. Senator in 2004, the one won by Barack Obama. No one is being told the truth, certainly not in a forceful enough way, especially the government pensioners, and that their pensions are going away once the state is forced to declare bankruptcy, and once Congress passes the law, Stewart insisted. We can't sustain this. It's going to go bust. A life remembered, Tom Burns. He was definitely a doer. By Mary Schenck and Tom Kasich, Urbana. It's fitting Tom Burns made his living as a civil engineer. Civility defined the life of the fun-loving, kind man who dedicated his life to the service of his clients and his community. Mr. Burns, of Urbana, died Monday at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis of complications from heart surgery. His wife of 52 years, Jeannie, was with him, as was one of their two children. He was 72. Of University of Illinois graduate, Mr. Burns met his future business partner, Ed Clancy, when they worked for local engineer Chuck Danner during the summer in the mid-1960s. I worked with a survey crew, and Tom was a sewer inspector, Clancy said. Both men took full-time jobs after college with Danner and stayed with him until branching out on their own in 1975, forming Burns, Clancy, and Associates. We didn't have any clients in 1975. We were out beating the bushes. I think on a Friday morning, a guy called from the sanitary district and said they needed a survey and asked, "How soon can you be here?" We said, "That afternoon." We went on and just grew, said Clancy, recalling that the firm started with him, Mr. Burns, Jeannie Burns, as their secretary, a field survey technician, and a drafter. Today, the Urbana business employs about 20 and is regarded as a premier engineering and surveying firm in East Central Illinois. Among their clients have been more than a dozen area villages and about 75 drainage districts all over the state, he said. Clancy called his partner and friend the face of the firm. When people called, they asked for Tom. He was the contact. He went to all the meetings and belonged to all the organizations. I was just one of the workers, Clancy said. People would ask for Tom because they trusted him. He was a good surveyor, a good civil engineer. They knew if he was involved, he would know a lot about the project, and they could always get an answer. He was our quality control. He looked at everything. He read the proposals. He read the transmittals. He looked at the survey plats. He read the legals, the engineering plans, the specifications, the cost estimates. He would know about their project, and they liked that, Clancy said. For many years, the firm hosted probably the best party of the holiday season, right around Thanksgiving, inviting present and former clients, politicians, and old friends. I suppose that invitation list was up to 6,000 people, Clancy said. Only about 700 to 800 showed up. It was a good time for everybody, I think. One of the more recognizable projects that the firm had a hand in was the renovation of the Boneyard Creek from Wright Street to Lincoln Avenue through the University of Illinois Engineering Quad. Mr. Burns knew a lot about his community and his craft and shared that knowledge on the boards of several local organizations. Those included the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation, the Urbana Rotary, the Urbana Country Club, Clark Lindsay Village, and the Champaign County Forest Preserve Friends Foundation, to name a few. Mr. Burns served 11 years in the two stints of the MTD board, including 1 year as its chairman, and his longtime friend and retired MTD administrator, Tom Costello. It's cliche, but he really did love this community. He was proud of it, a big Illini fan, said Costello, whose son Joe Costello worked as an intern for Mr. Burns when Mr. Burns served in the Illinois House. Mr. Burns succeeded State Representative Tim Johnson, Republican of Urbana, after Johnson opted to run for the U.S. House in 2000. Mr. Burns served only one term before redistricting changed his 104th House district, and he was defeated by Urbana Democrat Naomi Jacobson in 2002 by a 1,489-vote margin. Costello said his friend was more middle of the road than right. What you found was that while he carried the label Republican, he was a really very, very interested in the universal good, which is a rare commodity these days. Being an engineer, he was very big on problem solving, Costello said. Former State Representative Tom Cross of Oswego was House Minority Leader when Mr. Burns served. Cross is now chairman of the Illinois Board of Higher Education. Tom was a class guy to the core and was a gentleman, sensitive and caring about the General Assembly and serving the Champaign region. People say this all the time, but he really was a good guy. I've kept in touch with him. Whenever I was in Champaign, I'd run into him, and it was always good to see him. I remember his orange and blue ties. I can picture that guy with a smile on his face, Cross said. Mary Ellen Woolner, executive director of the Champaign County Forest Preserve District, had a similar memory. Mr. Burns was still serving on the Forest Preserves Foundation board at the time of his death. One of the things I will always remember about him is how I'd say, "Hey, Tom, it's good to see you." And he would always reply, "It's good to be seen," she said. Long before his work with the foundation board, Woolner said, Mr. Burns was a supporter of the Forest Preserve District. He always had a real interest in ensuring that the garden here at Lake of the Woods was fully funded and that we'd be able to make the repairs needed there. And then, when the foundation turns its sights on the Kickapoo Rail Trail, that became a big interest of his to make sure that we could get that thing built. As a longtime Urbana resident, he knew how important that trail would be for the community. He took a great interest in that, she said. Mr. Burns served about 6 years on the board of the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation. Executive Director Gail Roast was a huge fan. He had an incredible gift of seriousness and humor. He was never afraid to laugh at something during meetings, but he always asked deep, thoughtful, direction-driven questions on the board. He was a perfect board member, in what he brought in his commitment and passion for the community and community engagement. Roast added that Mr. Burns and Jeannie never hesitated to open their door for a CUSF event. They were always willing to graciously host. That is also the mark of an open, committed person in the community. Tim Bartlett, a 25-year employee of the Urbana Park District and now its executive director, called Mr. Burns a wonderful mentor. As a landscape architect, you're always sort of warned about civil engineers, how they kind of rule the world, that they're a challenge to landscape architects. But Tom couldn't have been more of a gentleman, very gracious and willing to explain things and take his time and make me feel welcome in the community. Ambucks Park, north of University Avenue in East Urbana, was a park that was close to his heart, with his grandson's, Braden Burns, physical challenges. I think he really identified with an all-access park. In fact, we were working with the club and with Tom to do some fundraising to get the next trail loop in there, Bartlett said. Bartlett said Mr. Burns also served in the Urbana Park District Foundation Board. He had a hand in almost everything big that we did, said Bartlett, ticking off the Anita Purvis Center, trails and play areas there, the Kickapoo Rail Trail, Weaver Park, and Meadowbrook Park. He was definitely a doer, Bartlett said. From the local section, Crime Stoppers, man wounded in shooting inside vehicle, Urbana Police investigating. By Mary Schenck, Urbana. Police are investigating a shooting Thursday afternoon in northeast Urbana that has left a 20-year-old Champaign man in critical condition. A release from Lieutenant Rich Searles said about 1 p.m., officers were sent to a shooting scene in the 1,000 block of North Cunningham Avenue, where they found bullet casings. They learned that the shooting victim drove himself to Carr Foundation Hospital's emergency room. A check of the vehicle revealed that shots had been fired inside it. The victim has what police are describing as non-life-threatening injuries to his arm and head. Because he's being treated, detectives have been unable to speak with him. Police said they believe this is an isolated incident, and there is no risk to the public. They said a woman in dark clothing was seen leaving the area on foot. An investigation is ongoing. Anyone with further information is encouraged to call the Urbana Police Department at 217-384-2320. Or, if wishing to remain anonymous, Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. Anonymous tips may also be submitted online at 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Court sentencing. St. Joseph man going to prison for battery. Judge agreed to recommend drug treatment. By Mary Schenck, Urbana. A St. Joseph man convicted of slugging and choking a former girlfriend who was in a car with him has been sentenced to 9 years in prison. Under Truth in Sentencing, Jesse Tatman, 36, will have to serve at least 7.5 years behind bars for the aggravated domestic battery of the 39-year-old woman who has since left the area. Although he maintained he was innocent of the crime, Tatman admitted he has a drug problem. My life is in shambles, and I take full responsibility for that, he said, asking Judge Tom DeFanis to recommend him for drug treatment while in prison. DeFanis agreed to do so. In July, a jury convicted Tatman of aggravated domestic battery after hearing from the woman that she was driving him on Interstate 74 from St. Joseph to Urbana about 1:10 a.m. May 6th, when they got into an argument and he hit her in the face with a closed fist. Assistant State's Attorney Bridget Schott reminded Judge Tom DeFantis of the testimony from the woman at trial that Tatman threatened to kill her as she drove. Once off the interstate in Urbana, she stopped the car and he reached over and began choking her, she testified. Tatman eventually got out of her car and took her keys with him. It wasn't until 2 days later that he was arrested. Champaign County Sheriff's deputies documented the woman's swollen lower lip and red marks on her neck in the immediate aftermath of the encounter. Because of his prior criminal record, which includes convictions for aggravated battery, driving under the influence, criminal trespass to residence, burglary, and driving under suspension, Tatman had to be sentenced to prison. He also faced an extended term of up to 14 years. Schott recommended 10, while defense attorney Brian King of Champaign argued for 3 to 5 years, noting that Tatman had only one prior violent crime. DeFantis noted that Tatman was likely intoxicated or under the influence of some drug when he slugged and choked the woman. Reviewing the number of substances that Tatman has abused, he remarked, "It's a pharmacy list." "This is a relatively outrageous offense," DeFantis said. Tatman was given credit on his sentence for 296 days already served. From the Area Update section, Paxton's first police dog, who retired in 2014, dies. Paxton. When Max passed away last week, Chad Johnson not only lost his best friend, but also his longtime partner in crime fighting. Johnson lived and worked 24/7 with Max, Paxton's first police dog. Since he was acquired by the department in 2006 at 19 or 20 months old, the yellow Labrador and Johnson, his handler, had been pretty much inseparable. Max loved his job, and it showed every time the two would leave their house in Paxton to go to work. "He loved it. He loved to work," Johnson said. "In the middle of the night, when we'd get a call to come out for a canine sniff, I'd get up, come in there to his room, and as soon as he'd see me getting ready, he'd jump up, go outside, do his thing, and I'd finish getting ready and come out, and he'd be waiting right there ready to get in the car and go. And once them lights came on in the squad car, he was up, he was whining, he was wanting out and to do his thing. And he did his thing and did it well." Before retiring from the police department in fall 2014, following a 6-year career, Max gained a reputation for his accurate and reliable nose, which he used countless times to track the presence of illegal drugs and cash in pullover vehicles to go along with fleeing suspects. Max spent his later years battling health issues, including diabetes and seizures, Johnson said. After having a bad seizure recently, Johnson made the decision to have him put down. "He was just a big, old, fuzzy dog," Johnson said. "He was just a lovable dog. He just loved attention." Johnson said he has no plans to get another canine partner at this point. The department currently has one canine. Tago, handled by the officer Tom Sink. This article by Will Brumleave in the Ford County Record. We'll take a short break now and return with a second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, February 21, 2018. Please stay tuned.